Good to see everybody today for High Point Bible Study. This is number two of three lessons on relationships from Proverbs. Relationships are an interesting subject nowadays because everybody has lots of relationships and they're all virtual. There was a famous TED Talk given by a lady by the name of Tanya Hollander who said that on New Year's Eve one day, she was looking at her Facebook page and had 626 Facebook friends, but spent New Year's Eve alone. And so she got a grant to do a study and actually went and visited every single one of her Facebook friends. And some of them were in England, some of them were in Canada, she was in Boston. And she wrote up a big research report on this and ended up doing a TED Talk entitled, "Are You Really My Friends?" And a fascinating thing that someone can sit in their pajamas at home and never have a physical interaction with anyone, but claim all kinds of relationships all around the globe. Today we're going to be talking about building godly relationships, and there's a plus and a minus. And the minus is anger. The minus is unsettled conflict. And Gary Smalley calls that the great destroyer of relationships is unrestrained anger. So I've got a little video on that, and then we'll just jump into our Bible study.
So what are the effects of unresolved grudges?
They can be very serious to your health, your mental health, your physical health, your emotional health. You can become physically ill. You could certainly become mentally ill, I think, if it's a long unresolved grudge.
You get really bitter towards the person. You have a bad outlook on things in general. And I just think that you don't wake up in a good mood every day if you hold a grudge towards someone. I think forgiving is a good thing to be doing.
Can't tell you any positive ones, I suppose.
No? How about any negative ones?
Yeah, sure. I mean, just kind of the obvious, you know. It's a sort of waste of time.
It has a stone in the water circle effect, ripple effect out to the children and the family and things like that.
We are all affected by relationships. There are good relationships and bad relationships. So let's see what the difference is. First of all, I think we're counseled in Proverbs to choose associates carefully. Charles Jones said, 5 years from now, you'll be pretty much the same as you are today, except for the books you read and the people you are close to. So the first thing in Proverbs 13:20 is associating with the wise. The one who walks with the wise will become wise, but a companion of fools will suffer harm. Be careful about who you hang around. I used to tell parents of teenagers, I was in student ministry for 15 years, and they would ask me, how do I know what's going on with my teenager? And I would say, carefully observe the people they hang around. They're either wanting to be like them or they are like them. Don't think that they're the black swan, that they're the anomaly. Associating with the wise, not with the fool. So how do you develop those associations? There are four tried and tested principles for developing a relationship, developing some common ground. One is to observe. Observe. See what is important to the other person. This is beginning a new relationship or deepening an existing relationship. Just take a moment to look and see what is important to that person. How they dress, what they eat. If it's a new person, look around their living space. You know, they don't have those bowling trophies up there just to collect dust. That is a conversation piece. So observe and see what's going on in their life. The second thing is very close to it, and that is to ask questions. My wife, Bonnie, she is an only child. She is very, very content to spend her day by herself. She said, you know, David, I really don't like chit-chat. I'm much more of a texter. you know, let's get to the bottom line, get the information communicated. I don't really like to chit-chat on the phone. But she said, I've learned to be very good at it. I said, so how are you good at chit-chat? She said, most people are so wrapped up in themselves, they never ask questions. But ask open-ended questions, not questions that have a yes or no to them. How do you feel about? What do you think about? Ask questions and then listen. God gave you two ears and one mouth. And if you want to develop a relationship with someone, ask them questions. People like to talk about themselves. Have you ever noticed that? It's absolutely true. They like to talk about themselves, so ask them questions and really listen. Listening is not just waiting your turn to talk. Too many times we communicate in person the way we do over social media or the way we do an email. And so it's just communicating information. And we want to get ours out there, and we want to get through with it. There are, you know, four types of personalities, the DISC model. Gary Smalley and John Trent call those the lion, directed, determined, the CEO kind, the lion, that's the D. The I is the otter, fun-loving, relational, that is the I personality. The S is what they call the golden retriever, the kind, the empathetic, the listener. And then the C is what the Trent and Smalley call the beaver, that is God's little engineer. They are the ones, the only ones among all of these that actually read the terms of agreement before checking accept and agree. They're the ones who read the instruction manual. They're the engineers. And so Dr. Vanderblumen, who used to be pastor at First Presbyterian here downtown, now has an executive search firm, especially for nonprofit and Christian organizations. He came up with little communication blocks for the desired communication of the DISC. I'm going to say D for last because that's my preferred communication style. The I, the otter, the fun-loving person, is involve me. Involve me. So basically, every employee in his search firm has this little array sitting on their desk. Their preferred communication style, their second, their third, and their least favorite. So the otter, involve me. That's the kind of person that is fun-loving, outgoing, life of the party, okay? The golden retriever, the S personality, is show me you care. It's said that people don't care what you know until they know that you care. And that's really the case for the S personality, the golden retriever. The beaver personality, the C, is give me the details. They're the only ones that really are interested in the fine print. And the D personality, the lion personality, is be brief, be bright, be gone. They're the bottom line personality. And so understanding and developing a relationship, what kind of personality type are you dealing with? Do they want to hear the details of everything that went on in your day? Or do they want you to be brief, be bright, be gone? Associate with the wise. Again, if you want to be a friend, if you want to have friends, you've got to be a friend. And if you feel like your relationship quota is lacking in any one of your relationships, kids, grandkids, spouse, sister, friends, coworkers, use these to observe, ask questions, listen. And then the fourth is to pay sincere compliments. Look for the ways you can encourage people. The society and culture today is tremendously discouraging. And if you can be an encourager, let me tell you, you will be popular. Gordon MacDonald wrote a book called Restoring Your Spiritual Passion. And he said, it's all about passion. And he said, there are people who will feed off your passion. There are people who will build your passion. And there are people who will drain your passion. Proverbs said, the one who walks with the wise will become wise. Iron sharpens iron. Look for people that you can develop relationships with who will make you better. And then it says associating with the faithful. Don't those who plan evil go astray? There is in the first couple of chapters of Proverbs, maybe the first chapter, this whole thing about young gangs. You know, come with us, we'll get lots of treasure, we'll murder and pillage, and gang violence is a huge blight on today's culture. But don't those who plan evil go astray? If you associate with people who plan evil, you're going to get caught up in evil. But those who plan good find loyalty and faithfulness. Wilma Askins in the email tweet that I sent out, a friend is one who sees through you but still enjoys the view. Great quotation. They see through you, they know you, but they're faithful and they're loyal. The second thing is to cultivate patience, and there are problems with the impatient. We live in an impatient society, have you noticed? You know, my wife's not the only one who likes to text rather than talk, right? I mean, that the microwave culture, the we have people that are totally into right now. I mean, Instagram is probably a symptom of that. So there are some problems with people who are impatient. And be careful in developing relationships with angry people and impatient people. In China, there is a category of workers, literally in the Chinese translates to English, standing in line professionals. They actually take advantage of the impatience of people. They typically are migrant workers. Guangzhou is a good example of that. They get about 60 cents U.S. per gig that they'll stand in line for this person for whatever they want, Starbucks or food or, you know, I would pay somebody to go down the driver's license renewal thing to do that for me. 60 cents sounds like a bargain. One couple claimed that they made more money than the county chief by simply collecting these fees for standing in line. That's a symptom of our impatient society. A quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man who schemes is hated. You can excuse people for a while in a relationship, but when you start noticing that they're controlled by anger, they're controlled by a quick temper, that's a kind of person, that's a kind of relationship you really need to avoid. Again, a blight on culture is the abusive husband who resorts to physical violence and a wife who just takes it and stays in that relationship. It's not something that is Christian. It's not something that should be tolerated. Secondly, the impatient promotes foolishness. Proverbs 14:29 said, a patient person shows great understanding, but a quick-tempered man promotes foolishness. There's a study, a physical study, on the physical results of unhealthy anger. The American Heart Association released the results of an exhaustive study on anger in their periodical Circulation. Dr. Janice Williams led the study while serving at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Part of their research included monitoring 13,000 adults for 6 years. These extensive profiles revealed that a person with a propensity for anger is nearly three times more likely to have a heart attack than their calmer counterparts. This ratio was maintained even after researchers took into account other major risk factors such as high blood pressure, high cholesterol, smoking, and obesity. Coupled with this information is the research by Dr. Redford Williams, a psychiatrist at Duke. Dr. Williams noted that 20% of American adults have a susceptibility to anger high enough to threaten their health. Of course, anger threatens far more than just our physical health. In the opening line of Amy Tan's book, The Kitchen God's Wife, the author writes this, quote, whenever my mother talks to me, she begins the conversation as if we were already in the middle of an argument. Be careful. Don't cultivate relationships with the impatient and the angry. Pray for them. Try to help them, but don't make them your best friend. I heard about an angry guy who, I wish this was one guy. The study says every year in America, a handful of men, this is more than one guy, are killed by soft drink vending machines. After not receiving a drink or due change, the men become angry, shake the machines until they tipped over and crush the person to death. Now, that's a immediate result. That's kind of a Darwin Award for anger, but it is a visual of acting foolishly, promoting foolishness. There is a syndrome called LFT, and it's low frustration tolerance. It's an abbreviated term for a prevalent cultural problem. Many Americans are walking time bombs, just waiting to explode. We've allowed circumstances, situations, schedules, and people to crowd out our ability to tolerate frustration. It makes us live on the edge and causes us to quickly erupt with anger when relatively minor frustrations occurred. Road rage. Sometimes you see copier rage when people have to stand in line and you're ahead of them and they're a little impatient around the copy machine. We see it all over, but the patient person shows great understanding, but a quick-tempered one promotes foolishness. And finally, a hot-tempered, it stirs up conflict. A hot-tempered man stirs up conflict, but a man slow to anger causes strife. It's sad, the shootings that we saw in Dayton and El Paso and all over. Rage, frustration, all of these things go into it. I heard about a guy, I'm not trying to make light of this. This was back in 1987, but Percy Washington killed the wrong woman because he forgot his glasses. He literally was angry at his ex-wife, thought she was taking advantage of him, went to the place where she went to church, shot his shotgun through the windshield, and killed the wrong woman. Same car, wrong woman. And when the police arrested him, he said, "I feel really bad." He said, "I forgot my glasses and killed the wrong woman." I mean, that sounds like a crazy made-up story, but it's actually a sad commentary on today's society. So what can you do? What can you do to, you say, well, you know, David, it's not just developing a relationship with someone that's an angry person. My anger gets in the way. My anger gets in the way with my kids, my husband, my wife, my coworkers. My anger bubbles up. What can I do about that? Let me give you three things. This is from Medical News Today, managing editor of that magazine, kind of compiled some sources and studies. And he gave three things to do in managing anger. Number one is to recognize it. Recognize the onset of anger in your own life. Many people are knee-deep into an argument before they realize they're mad. He said a rapid heartbeat, faster breathing, tension in your body, restlessness, pacing, tapping of the feet, clenched jaw, clenched fist, sweating and trembling. I mean, generally, we know when this is starting to come over us. It's this adrenaline surge that we get, fight or flight, and unfortunately, oftentimes we fight. But one of the real keys of managing your own anger and not letting it destroy a relationship is recognizing when it comes on. The second thing is give yourself some space to react. I'm seldom sad for things I did not say. But I can tell you in 45 years of marriage, there are a lot of things I did say that came out of my mouth that I've apologized for over and over and over. But once they're out, you just can't take them back. So he said, when you realize anger is starting to come over you, he said, you know, literally the old adage of count to 10. Don't say the first thing that comes to your mouth. You know, just take a step back. Just think about it. I'm getting angry. I need to calm down. Maybe even vacate from that situation. Just, I need a moment. Let me just go to my office for a second. Just take a short walk. Go get a drink of water. Do anything to break the pattern of anger. And thirdly, make contact with a person who's not immediately involved. You know, make a phone call. See a neighbor. Let me just tell you what's going on. This is vent on a third uninvolved party, not on the person that you're feeling the anger about. And the third thing is to apply techniques that can help you control anger. Recognize it, take some time out, and then breathing, slow breathing can help. Ease the physical tension. by tensing a part of your body and then releasing it. Prayer. Exercise. The old thing of working out your anger and physical exercise with a run. Finding some alternatives to channel your anger. Remember the old Billy Crystal movie with anger management? The mobster pulls out the gun and he says, well, would it make you feel better to shoot the pillow? And in the movie, he shoots it about three times. Yeah, that made me feel a lot better. I'm not suggesting that, okay? I'm not suggesting guns. But find an alternative channel for anger. And then create a distraction. Do something that you enjoy rather than focusing on the moment of anger. But more relate, and this is Gary Smalley, more relationships have been destroyed by unrestrained anger than anything else. James Dobson said, there's no greater opportunity to influence our fellow person for Christ than to respond with love when we've been unmistakably wronged and assaulted. Anger occurs when you feel like your expectation is here, but the reality falls far short of that. I can be here all day long giving you experiences from my marriage. When my wife's expectation was up here, and I came in way low, I did not meet that. There have been vice versa as well. But when expectation falls lower than reality, oftentimes that gap is filled with anger. So Dobson said, on those occasions, the difference between Christian love and the values of the world are most brilliantly evident. This is the chance to show the fruits of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, all of those fruits of the Spirit. And where do they come from? They don't come naturally to us. They come as a benefit of the Holy Spirit. My wife has a model that she does not let her feet touch the floor in the morning before she really commits that day in prayer. Lord, this is your day. I want you to fill me with your Spirit. I want you to control me. I want you to guide. I mean, dedicating the day to the Lord makes all the difference in the world. So the benefits of patience are anger management. In chapter 16:32 of Proverbs, patience is better than power. Controlling one's temper is better than capturing a city. And then bearing with one another. A person's insight gives him patience, and his virtue is to overlook an offense. You don't have to point out every flaw that you see. Finally, you can communicate loyalty and love. And this is the flip side of anger. We've talked about the negative side of relationships. How do you build relationships? One is admiration. Proverbs 3:3-4, never let loyalty and faithfulness leave you. Tie them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will find favor and high regard in the sight of God and people, God and man. There is a great book that I want to give away today called The Five Love Languages. Gary Chapman wrote this, and it really has spoken to me. He said there are basically five love languages that we all communicate love and give love. One is physical touch. Two is affirming words. Three are acts of service. Four are gifts, the giving of gifts. And five is quality time. Let me just suggest this can revolutionize your relationship building. I don't get a commission off these, okay? I'm going to give these away. But the idea of when you want to develop a relationship, really exploring by asking questions, what is your love language? How do you receive love? Often it traits back to childhood and the father who always brought something, a gift, home when he was away on a trip, and that was the way a daughter receives love from a father. But finding out, oftentimes you will marry someone who has a different love language than you. And so sometimes it's like speaking two different languages in the home. You're speaking Spanish and she's speaking English because you're dealing with two different love languages. I want to give three books away. Who hasn't read this but promises me they will read it? Let's see. Right here. Of course, women. One other. Don't be shy. Okay, no, I'll give it to you. See, it's the benefit of sitting out in the big room. All those of you sit back there passing notes in the small rooms, you don't get the books. But the five love languages, finding out how to express loyalty, how to express faithfulness, and then finally, atoning attitudes. Wickedness is atoned for. Notice this. You say, man, I've been angry. I've really messed it up in some relationships. Wickedness is atoned for by loyalty and faithfulness. And one turns from evil by the fear of the Lord. Chapter 10, verse 12, hatred stirs up conflict, but love covers all offenses. How does it start? It starts with the fear of the Lord, putting Him first in your life. But then it comes to loyalty and faithfulness. One of the most impactful stories I've heard on this came out of the Watts riots of 1968. A pastor, evangelical pastor, African-American pastor, really stood for truth. While the cries were going about, burn, baby, burn, he was saying, no, we've got to be Christian. We've got to be loving. We've got to get along. We're just destroying our neighborhood. He became an outspoken opponent of the riots, and therefore he became a target of the rioters. And people said they were going to kill him. He was under a death threat every day during that tumultuous time. One of the fears was that someone would attach a bomb to his car and blow him up in his car. And so he said every morning he went out to drive to work, and there was that moment where he sat in the car, snapped on the seatbelt, turned the key, and it never blew up. He said it was only after the riots that I found out how safe I was, because my dear wife made a point every morning of getting up before me, going out, sitting in the car, turning on the key herself first to make sure it was safe for me. Love covers a multitude of sins. Be positive, be faithful, be loyal, and you'll find that people can overlook those outbursts of anger and wickedness that we all have. We have a newly ordained reverend in our midst, Rick Ponce, right back here with the Houston Fire Department. Rick, why don't you close us in prayer, okay? He was ordained this past Sunday afternoon. Amen. Amen. God bless. You're dismissed.